Happy Thursday, here to set you free on the only true democracy and talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. Good afternoon and welcome or welcome back in this hour. Great guest joining us, one of my absolute favorites. Later in the hour, Talk Media News live from our nation's capital giving us updates. No rip from the headlines today. We're going to get to it, but of course, we welcome, encourage, and invite you to call with your questions, your comments, your opinions, your concerns. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. More than a pleasure to welcome somebody who is a brilliant man, has an extensive background. I always learn something from him. I know that you do as well. An enjoyable guest, and I am honored to be able to say he is also a friend, a personal friend. Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates and strategic risk and leadership consultancy that serve global companies and organizations. The Colonel founded it in 2010, but prior, he was with the U.S. Air Force for 26 years as an intelligence officer. He attained the rank of Colonel, and he can also be seen regularly on CNN, where he is a military analyst. Colonel Cedric Layton. Colonel Layton, how you doing? Good afternoon. Thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Leslie. I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing good, thank you, and thank you to have you with us. I love having you, and I know you're busy with your time, so thank you for making time in your schedule.
All of it's for you, Leslie. Absolutely.
Now, we may be on competitor networks on television, although we are friends, and I think we think more alike when it comes to strategy in the military, and I do, honestly, because I follow your lead, because you have such knowledge, experience, you have the experience, I don't have it. But when Donald Trump went on the stage at the UN, which was founded for diplomacy, and basically what I considered, you know, either directly or indirectly threatened war with North Korea, I said the remarks were juvenile and dangerous. And I think that went viral of me saying that, because there's certainly a lot of people who, like Trump, didn't like what I had to say. But now, I said at the time that rhetoric was dangerous because the leader of North Korea is unstable, and calling him Rocket Man and threatening war is not going, nothing good's going to come of it. The rhetoric is not helpful. Well, there is a poll that shows now that more than two-thirds of voters in the United States say that the president's rhetoric toward North Korea is unhelpful. They think diplomacy and sanctions are the best way to rein in Pyongyang's weapons program. And that poll was conducted by, where I work on TV, Fox News. So first of all, Colonel, was that, from where you stand with your experience as a colonel, as a military analyst on CNN, when Donald Trump said that at the UN, did your heart skip a beat?
Oh, yes. I practically fell out of my chair when he used the term Rocket Man in his UN speech. It's one thing if you put it on Twitter. I wouldn't recommend it, especially for the leader of the free world, to actually be saying something like that. But when he said it at the UN, in that forum, you know, behind that rostrum, and, you know, reiterated it in the way that he did, that was not the place nor the time to do that, in my opinion. It is certainly a term where you have to crack a smile in some respects that it's being used, but on the other side, you know that somebody is listening to this, and that somebody is a leader of a country that feels encircled by the rest of the world. And although they've done many things that are very, very bad, and they are not nice people, to put it very mildly, they do have feelings, and those feelings can unfortunately result in all kinds of military action and even non-military action that could be very detrimental to both the U.S. and its allies. So I think the time right now should be used for diplomacy, for reaching out. Basically, Trump has the opportunity to have a blank slate in this, or had the opportunity, I should say, to have a blank slate in the Korean crisis. But this kind of paints him into a corner, and that's not a good place to begin.
Well, especially when you say that he would, as he did, unleash fire and fury on North Korea if it continued to threaten the U.S. North Korea has said that they perceive what he said as a declaration of war, which is frightening. But I have to say, Colonel, that two things with President Trump. One, I think that he and the head of North Korea are probably more alike than any president we've ever had. And honestly, this could be a huge, this could be a legacy for him being able to do a deal with North Korea because he says he's the great deal maker. So I think that as unprecedented as it is, because it's an unprecedented president, I am no Trump fan. I think that we'll talk about how much danger he's put us and the rest of the world, and especially South Korea, in a minute. But regarding diplomacy, he may poo-pooed that term, but really, when you're cutting a deal, that's diplomacy, right? Diplomacy is just cutting a deal on a political level. And I think if anybody could cut a deal with this guy, because I think they're very similar personalities, they're both narcissistic, I think Donald Trump could actually sit down with Kim Jong-un and cut a deal.
Well, I think it's absolutely possible. And this is one of those things where, you know, it's kind of like the doctrine in relationships, opposites attract. You know, it's one of those things where in this particular case, and even during the campaign, he mentioned at times that why not? Why wouldn't he sit down with Kim Jong-un? And that should have been an opening. It should have been something where he could have potentially done that. And, you know, you go back to historically to let's say Nixon and China. President Nixon was regarded as a virulent anti-communist, somebody who absolutely hated Mao Zedong and any other communist that was out there. And what does he do? He very astutely goes to China, opens up that country, and does something that is, was really unprecedented for the time. And I think at that moment, created the framework for the world that followed, not only that particular moment, but the world that followed the demise of communism in most of the world. So that was a seminal move, and it is absolutely something that President Trump could do if he wanted to, and if he used his deal-making skills that he talks about so much.
I want to talk about the deal making, because that's really important. And you said you believe diplomacy is helpful. One of the first things the Trump administration did is, much like the past three administrations, is they put sanctions on North Korea. Now, I am not a fan of Steve Bannon, but there are a couple of things he said, and I want to go with probably the second one he said first, which is there's really no good situation with North Korea. With regard to diplomacy and sanctions, it has failed in both Democratic and Republican administrations in the past. So some people say, let's do something different. Going back to the first thing Steve Bannon said that I agree with, which is military options should never be on the table, with North Korea. Do you agree with that? Do you agree a military option with North Korea should not even be on the table? And if so, explain why to the people listening.
Well, what I would say is that military options should always be options of last resort. So when you start talking to somebody, they should have in their mind, especially a rival country like North Korea, they should have in the back of their mind that something very bad could happen to them. So it becomes a potentially existential question for them if they don't behave in a manner that we can at least deal with. But having said that, I think the first foray should be one in which a new administration talks to anybody that they can in order to diffuse tension. Sometimes it's good to work from a blank slate and to actually provide a way in which they can perhaps save face, perhaps get out of a situation that they find themselves in. The bottom line for North Korea is really that they want to preserve their regime. They want to be able to have continuity for the Kim family, which really amounts to a kind of communist Kim dynasty. And that idea of preserving continuity, preserving in essence what amounts to the continued reign of an almost godlike figure for the North Korean people, that is something that is very important to them. So you look at what's important to them and see what you can do to either disabuse them of the notion that they are that important, or failing that, actually say, okay, these are the kinds of things that we can accept, but if you go beyond this particular range of behaviors, that is something that we cannot accept. So when it comes to negotiating with a country like this, it's of course very dangerous, and you have to expect them to lie and to cheat and to do things that are not in concert with what we would think good behavior would be. And then we have to be careful that we're ready, willing, and able to back up anything that we do with both diplomatic action followed by economic action like sanctions. actions, political action that may come later, and then finally, as a last resort, military action if they do something that is not only insanely provocative, but also something that puts lives at risk, and lives of both of U.S. citizens and U.S. servicemen, but also of our allied citizens and servicemen, both in South Korea and Japan in particular. So there are some things. I think military options are actually always out there, but they should not be the ones that you go to first. They should be the ones that come afterwards, after you've exhausted all other possibilities. And, you know, it's always good to have a little bit of creativity, but good creativity, in the conduct of diplomacy and other aspects of foreign relations.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with our guest, Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, U.S. Air Force intelligence officer for 26 years and a CNN military analyst. Please follow him on Twitter at Cedric Layton, CedricLeighton. The website, CedricLeighton.com. Same spelling. We'll be back with him and you talking North Korea and more right after this.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth. The Leslie Marshall Show, 888-6-LESLIE. If you miss Leslie on TV this week, catch up at LeslieMarshallShow.com.
Back with Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, military analyst for CNN, and an intelligence officer with the U.S. Air Force for 26 years. Colonel, thank you for holding and welcome back. We'll take your calls in a moment, folks. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. The relationship right now between the United States and Korea is at a 50-year low. Pyongyang seems to ramp up the pace of its weapons tests, and we know that they detonated what government officials say was a hydrogen bomb. If that development is true, experts are saying this would signal a major milestone in North Korea's nuclear program. First of all, do you agree with that statement and why? And secondly, do you believe they've done what they said?
I think that they probably did develop a device that is at least close to being a hydrogen bomb. There's some technical issues that you know, some people disagree with within the intelligence community as to whether it really was a true hydrogen bomb. But either way, you know, you're just as dead if one of them falls on you or if another type falls on you. So it you know, in the practical sense, it may not make that much difference. The assessment, you know, of North Korea and U.S. relations is true that it is very, very much at a low point. There have been other low points, you know, since the armistice was signed back in 1953 that really didn't end the Korean War. It's just basically a pause in the Korean War. So technically that conflict is still going on. You know, from that standpoint, you've got a situation where the North Koreans are looking at any way in which they can get the respect that they feel they need for their country. So what has happened so far is that the type of respect that they're seeking is something that they're absolutely not getting from President Trump or from most elements of his administration. And that can be a net positive or a negative depending on how things play out. But it is a situation where there's definitely a danger there. And that, you know, that could, where these things could actually escalate out of control. And it could mean, Leslie, that we're looking at a place where the rhetoric will increase, will get even hotter than it's been right now. And as you mentioned, the number of weapons that they're actually testing, I've counted 8 separate new missiles that they've launched just this year, and missiles that we really didn't know very much about. The other thing that's interesting about what they're doing is their capabilities for refueling those missiles and using a special kind of fuel have actually apparently increased. So they are definitely on a path toward not only creating the weapon systems that they think they need to protect themselves, but they're also on a path that in essence allows them to further develop those weapon systems on their own with either no or with minimal outside assistance. And that's something different. And what that means is that sanctions may not work against them, may not be as effective as policymakers would like them to be.
Let's take some calls. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Michael is on line 3 in the Bronx. Michael, thank you for joining us. Question or comment for Colonel Layton?
Hi. Hello, Leslie, and hello, Colonel. Saluting you.
Hi, Michael.
The big question is, do you or is there anybody in the military that you know that feel they are being used by Mr. 45? I'm not going to say his name or his title, because that will only piss me off. But the thing is that when this back and forth between him and North Korea and kind of like baiting each other, and then what's going to happen next? It's like, for a guy that has the gall to tell us to respect the military and so forth, I feel that he's going to use the military just because he doesn't like what the response he gets. Like, he gets on a Twitter storm and then be like, okay, guys, get him. And then who will be hurt at the end? It will not only be the fear of us getting attacked, us U.S. Civilians, but North Korean innocent people could get attacked as well. And your military will be placed in jeopardy only because two people who are supposed to be world leaders are acting like a bunch of juvenile delinquents.
Okay, Michael, hold that. Colonel, hold that answer. We're going to get it when we come back. Colonel Cedric Layton is our guest military analyst with CNN. He is the CEO of Cedric Layton and Associates. Cedric Layton Associates, no and in there, founder and president. Follow him on Twitter at Cedric Layton, CedricLeighton. The website, CedricLeighton.com, same spelling. Back after this with the answer and more talking North Korea. Join us, 888-6-LESLIE.
Follow Leslie on Twitter. Just go to www.twitter.com/LeslieMarshall, and we'll be sure to share your tweets.
Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, military analyst for CNN with 26 years as a U.S. Air Force intelligence officer. He's our guest. Good to have him back. Colonel, you heard the question and comments from Michael in the Bronx prior to the break. Your response?
Well, I would say that, Michael talked about whether or not people in the military think that they're being used by President Trump. And I think everybody in the military has a concern that, whatever they do, that the sacrifices that they make in defending our country, that they be worthwhile, that they be acknowledged. And, I think we have a much better climate in terms of civil-military relations than we've had in quite some time. And that's not something that's specific to this administration. It's something that very much predates it, going back all the way to 9/11 and even before that, all the way to Desert Storm. But having said that, there are a lot of opinions in the military, a lot of different opinions. And I would say that there are some people that are very concerned about, in essence, being, being a pawn in a greater situation where forces are playing off against each other. And we're, in essence, cogs in the machine, so to speak, to take an industrial age metaphor. But the basic idea that military people have is that they are going to serve whatever the commander-in-chief asks them to do as long as the order is a lawful order. And so as this plays out, they want him, most military members will want the president to take every possible measure before there's an outright armed conflict with North Korea. If there is no way to do that, then most of them, of course, would be ready, willing, and able to support whatever is decided from a command authority perspective. But that's really what we're talking about here. Is our lives going to be wasted needlessly? Well, war is frankly a horrible situation, and it could very well end up we do get into a situation of armed conflict of one degree or another. And if that happens, you don't want it to be in vain. You want it to be for the right reasons, and it's a terrible thing to have to go through. And I think every measure should be taken, and military people, most of them, would agree that every measure should be taken before we feel we have to resort to armed conflict.
Talking about that, I mean, there's just so many issues with this. I think that people forget, because we're over here, that going to war with North Korea would really be more so North Korea going to war with South Korea. In other words, the overwhelmingly large number of fatalities or victims that we are putting, in a sense, almost like targets in front of ourselves, are the people of South Korea, and quite frankly, even the people of North Korea, which we'll talk about in a minute, but the people of South Korea. Would you agree with that, Colonel?
I would, absolutely, because, when you look at where the North Koreans have their conventional artillery, it's all in range of Seoul. Seoul, a city, where if you look at the entire metropolitan area, is about 25 million people. I mean, this is no small village, and it's way different than it was back, 60 or some years ago in the Korean War. And this is a very clear fact, and you're absolutely right to point this out. The vast majority of the casualties in a conflict on the Korean Peninsula are absolutely going to be Koreans, both North and South. And in the South, the risk is that, of those 25 million in and around Seoul, that you could see casualties. Some estimates are as high as a million casualties. And of course, you'd have mass exodus, or at least an attempt at a mass exodus, if there was a surprise attack, for example, against the South, kind of like they did in 1950. And so that would be a really a disastrous situation. So, the key thing to remember about all of this is that anytime people talk about these figures and talk about the plans that exist, the one big military truism that is out there is that no plan survives contact with the enemy. And for a fact that the risk is that things could be even worse than projected, just because not only of the weapons that they have arrayed, the conventional weapons that they have arrayed, but they may also choose to do other things, such as use chemical weapons, mount special operations attacks, potentially engage in a cyber attack that could devastate the infrastructure. So these are the kinds of things that we have to be concerned about, and the big price is definitely going to be paid on the Korean Peninsula, and it's going to be a hell of a situation in a case like that.
I want to talk about something that was said by a former NATO military chief, and that's retired Navy Admiral James Stavridis. He was in the military 37 years. That included 4 years as the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. As a matter of fact, Hillary Clinton vetted him as a possible running mate, it was alleged. President-elect Donald Trump even considered naming him Secretary of State. He's a serious guy, and he is not an armchair pundit, some people would say, as far as that as one can possibly be. And he believes that there's a 10% chance of a nuclear war between the United States and North Korea, and a 20-30% chance of a conventional but still very bloody conflict. Do you agree with that? And again, why do you think he arrived at that? That's frightening.
It is frightening, and I do agree with that, Leslie. I think Admiral Stavridis is not only an experienced military commander. I have met him, and he is also a very astute thinker, and you know, both being head of NATO and before that he had other commands, he definitely has a feel for what could potentially happen, and I would agree that the odds are probably about 10% of a nuclear war, an all-out nuclear war, and that would be you know, absolutely unprecedented in the history of mankind, and the idea that a conventional war, conventional conflict of some type, could be as high as 30%. The chance of that, I think that could be correct, and that's why. And a week ago, I probably would have said it was actually higher than that, at least for the conventional part of it. And that is a very dangerous situation to be in. What I'm really concerned about is that, you know, when you look at something of this type, not all of the facts are known. I think the Admiral arrived at this based on his analysis of the situation and the fact that, you know, we're getting to this brink. We have this brinksmanship that's going on rhetorically, but we also have actions that are occurring. We're flying bombers off the coast of North Korea, off the eastern coast. The North Koreans are responding by putting their fighter aircraft on the eastern side of their country, and they've also threatened to shoot down airplanes, even if they're flying in international waters, even if they're not directly targeting the North. And it's definitely escalated, and it is something that you know, could very much happen if there is a miscalculation. And that's the one thing you hope, that everybody who's actually got their finger on the trigger is actually thinking professionally and not emotionally when it comes to that. And that's a pretty tall order to ask for.
All right, Colonel, we're going to have to take a quick break. I think we just got to reconnect the connection with Leslie here. We're going to continue that thought in 1 second. We're going to wrap up with you and then get to Talk Media News. But, Colonel, great thoughts on North Korea, and we'll have more on the other side of the break. It is the Leslie Marshall Show here. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 for you to reach Leslie. And we'll be back with her in just a minute.
Leslie Marshall, the simple truth in a complicated world. 888-6-LESLIE.
Back. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's back as well. Colonel Leighton, sorry, we had a tiny little technical glitch, had to go to break there. You were talking about retired Navy Admiral James Stavridis, who spent 37 years in the military, saying there's a 10% chance of a nuclear war with North Korea, but he said a 20 to 30% chance of a conventional and bloody conflict. Colonel?
Absolutely, Leslie. I think the Admiral is right on. Admiral Stavridis is somebody I've met. He is a big thinker when it comes to military things, a lot of experience as well as a lot of knowledge. And this is a conflict that you know, will be a mess no matter what happens. It'll be ugly, and it will absolutely affect the Korean Peninsula for many, many years to come should it ever happen like that. So the real goal has to be not to have a conflict and to, in essence, contain the North Koreans so that they don't do damage to us and to our allies.
In the past, Colonel, both Democratic and Republican administrations have failed with diplomacy and sanctions. What would be different this time around?
Well, I think the issue is China. China makes a big difference here, and if they are actually convinced not to allow the North Koreans to have the goods that pass through the bridges that connect the two countries across the Yalu River, that would be a major deal. The other thing, of course, is the whole banking sector. If the sanctions on international financial transactions are actually put into effect also by the Chinese, that could have a significant impact on the North Koreans and potentially could help defuse the situation. This is a little bit different. Sanctions, you're right, have not worked in the past, at least not to the fullest extent. But these might be different, especially if China's role changes.
I want to also talk about, you know, there's so much to talk about, but I had mentioned the people of North Korea. And the people of North Korea, after those comments by Trump, you know what? The people of North Korea are ready for war. Millions have volunteered. 4.7 million, or at least that's what Kim Jong-un's media is reported, volunteered to enlist in North Korea in armed forces. But these people are brainwashed. They know nothing of the outside world. It's almost like the Truman Show that was a movie, but it's not pleasant and sunny. These people have a very warped perception of not only the world, but the United States. And I think that even though he claims that, I think that very much may be true. And I say that because I almost see him ordering these people, you know, kill them, you know, charge, you know, almost like a cartoon character, but it's not funny and certainly Absolutely. Very real, that these people almost are like lemmings that are willing to go to their death because they're living in a brainwashed world in North Korea.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And what you're talking about here is a whole society that sees the truth in one way, and it's whatever the dear leader or great leader or whatever term they're using for their leader at that moment in time is using. And they will follow that person basically to their deaths. And that's the tragedy behind this. This is, you know, kind of a medieval mindset in the modern age with, in some cases, modern weapons. Of course, all of those 4.7 million people, if they're under arms, they won't have the same type of weaponry that our soldiers have, or the South Koreans or the Japanese would have. But nonetheless, it would be a horrible situation, and those people would definitely end up going to their deaths if they came in, tried to fight the way their leadership wants them to fight.
Do you believe that 4.7 million people offered to enlist in the North Korean armed forces in the days after Trump promised to totally destroy North Korea? And the reason I say that is, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have access to Twitter in North Korea.
That's right. That's exactly right. They have a nascent social media scene in North Korea, but it's all government sanctioned. Nothing like the free for all that we have on Twitter or in any of our other social media platforms. So yes, I think it is absolutely possible, because what happens is their lives are directed. Every morning when people get up, they don't usually use their personal alarm clocks. They are awakened by music that is blaring at 5 a.m. from thousands of loudspeakers all across either their town or if they're lucky enough to live in Pyongyang, all across that city. And that's the kind of thing that that you're dealing with here. You're dealing with people who are part of they feel themselves they're part of a huge collective effort, and that effort is the Korean nation, the North Korean nation. And that is why this is entirely plausible that these people volunteered. It might not be the most effective fighting force on the planet, but they're certainly among the most numerous.
One more question. What is the last thing, with all of your experience in this last minute, that you'd like to leave our listeners with regard to North Korea today, Colonel?
Leslie, this is one of the biggest issues that we're facing right now. Now, North Korea is a dangerous country. It has weapons. It's developed weapons, but it's done it in a vacuum almost from everything else that's going on around the world. They've created a situation where they believe that their survival is dependent on their ability to fight the United States, but also to be seen as an equal by the United States. I don't think we should give them that status, but what we should do is we should be able to engage with them, try our best to engage with them on a diplomatic plane, and do everything we can, short of capitulation, short of any appeasement of any type, to make sure that we don't go into an armed conflict. There are certain red lines that we wouldn't want them crossed. I wouldn't want to have them crossed. I think what we should do is make sure that those red lines are very clear to them, and that we also enlist the help of the Chinese to make sure that what happens in North Korea is basically contained in North Korea. They don't want an unstable North Korea, nor do we, and it becomes really important for us to work together to keep the lid on this particular situation as tight as it possibly can be kept.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you on. You know that I adore you. Colonel Cedric Layton, thank you. Great respect and admiration, as well as adorement. Thank you for being with us.
Leslie. Thank you so much.
Colonel Cedric Layton, founder and president of Cedric Layton Associates, military analyst for CNN. Follow him on Twitter at Cedric Layton, CedricLeighton. The website, CedricLeighton.com, CedricLeighton.com. Calling now, for live from our nation's capital, one of my favorite people, who also happens to be the Washington Bureau Chief for Talk Media News, Ms. Ellen Ratner. Ellen, thank you for joining us. There has been somebody who's passed away. That's a big name.
That's right. Hugh Hefner has died. He died at 91. He died in the Playboy Mansion, which he had actually sold a year ago, but was allowed to live there until he died. The mansion was actually sold to one of his neighbors, the Hostess Cupcake guy. So there you have it. Now, what's interesting is he's going to be cremated, and his ashes are going to be in a drawer right next to Marilyn Monroe, a person that he actually put up his her pinup photograph, etc., in his early Playboy magazine. What's also interesting about Hugh Hefner is he claims he slept with 1,000 women. However, I want to say this about old Hugh Hefner, which is that we have got to thank him because he actually put sexuality talk on the main front. It was no more in the deep six, and because of him, people are free to talk about sexuality. So he's a mixed bag, to say the least.
Who gets the empire? I know he has a couple of kids, and three kids, right? A daughter and two sons. And what happens to it? Is this the end of the Playboy, bunny world as we know it?
Well, we do know that he has a website. But he does not have a magazine anymore, and we're not sure exactly about exactly who gets his money. We have not seen his will. We have not seen, it has not been filed yet with probate, and my guess is that it will take a couple weeks.
Okay. And in other news, we have, how much? Oh, we got a couple of minutes here. Good. Talk to us about the Trump tax plan.
So, of course, we don't have a bill yet. We just have an outline of a bill, and we do know that on the outline of the bill, people are getting they're going to be able to keep their mortgage deduction, etc. The White House said today at the briefing that most Americans will get $1,000 more money. Well, that may be, but we don't know what this is going to do to the deficit. The White House was very not direct about what this might do to Donald Trump's personal wealth. A lot of criticism has come from that. There has been a criticism from the Progressive Policy Institute that the Democratic National Committee needs to also come up with its own plan. They have a budget every year that the Progressive group has put out, but not a tax plan, and there is actually a difference.
Okay, and lastly, just in a sentence, update on aid to Puerto Rico.
So this is very interesting because we do know that one of the cruise ships came by to take its people and some other people to safety. The president said people are going to be blown away by what they're going to be doing. We do know that over half the people in Puerto Rico do not have access to drinking water. We know that.
And unfortunately, we are out of time. Ellen Ratner, live from our nation's capital, Washington Bureau Chief for Talk Media News. I'm Leslie Marshall, Steve Trippi in for Mark Grimaldi today.